Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband. Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball.
All right, yes, indeed, it is Wednesday night rugby. We've got Jerry Thorney of the Irish Times with us in studio, and as ever, Keith Wood is on the line. We'll talk about the Munster Scarlets final, but we haven't actually done any reflection yet on the semi-finals. And what the hell happened, Leinster?
Whoa, extraordinary. They played well below their best, possibly their worst performance of the season in their biggest game of the Pro 12 campaign so far. Quite extraordinary watching it again, looking at six unforced handling errors in the first 14 minutes, which kind of set the tone. Like five of they had 13 handling errors in the match, and five of them were just the first receiver dropping the pass from the scrum half. It was really basic stuff. Restarts not going 10, kicks going out in the full, questionable choice of tactics, only once going to the air to have for Adam Byrne to test a little small flanker in the last 50 minutes of the game on the wing. Watching again, Shane Horgan kept noting in commentary that they actually looked tired at various points, and they're used to a very high tempo game. Yeah, whatever way they managed the players in the 3 weeks, it was Sexton's first Pro 12 game since January. It was his first game since the Claremont match. Some players either looked underdone or overdone in training. I don't know what it was, but I would safely say that when they went through the review process, they would have questioned their whole preparation and build up the game, because the melee started from the very beginning of the match.
Yeah, Keith, sometimes we talk about this, if the intensity begets the errors or if the errors beget the lack of intensity, and it just looked like everything was wrong and everything was off from start to finish. Even when they got the fillip of the red card, you felt it doesn't really look like this is a team who is going to be able to take advantage of that.
No, and I think I tend to always come down the line on its attitude and intensity first, and how that actually reacts, and how the team respond to that. And I don't know. I thought they looked poor from the start. They looked, Jerry described them as either tired or underdone. But often, if you just don't get to the pitch fully, nothing seems to happen right for you. So many things just were average. We're not used to average, really, from Leinster.
Yeah, I suspected as well that there would be a half-time kick in the first couple of minutes of the second half. Things were going okay, but then another handling error just undid all the sense of, okay, well, it's okay, it's ground, we got that out of our system. And that there was nobody, or there didn't seem to be a collective experience to be able to think their way out of that situation.
Yeah, they're missing a few experienced players, Jamie Heaslip, Rob Kearney, Sean O'Brien, Sean Cronin, and they opted not to start with Devon Toner, and they opted not to start with Fergus McFadden. And certainly Adam Byrne, fine attacking talent though he is, has been culpable occasions on the wing of biting in or missing his tackles, as he did for the first try. It looked like they shouldn't be conceding three tries from just four visits into their own 22 from the opposition, particularly at home, particularly in the semi-final. And having been outflanked to the outside for the first try, which has happened to them on occasion, it seemed as if then they were so conscious of that, they were then done twice on the inside shoulders by not plugging the gaps on the inside. And, you have to give Scarlets credit, because some of their offloading and some of the tries were outstanding, but defensively Leinster were below par as well. And I think also Claremont took a little bit of a leaf out of Scarlets took a leaf out of the Claremont manual in going after them at the breakdown. I think they forced about eight turnovers at the breakdown, and they just didn't resource the breakdown well enough. They didn't clear out accurately enough at times, and it goes back to what Keith was saying about a lack of intensity. This also emanated from their carries. There weren't too many strong carries over the gain line, so I would say when they did the review of the game, they came down short in most areas.
Yeah, which I guess, Keith, means that it's been an unsuccessful season for Leinster, because, 3 or 4 weeks ago, we were thinking, okay, this is a team who's come on and leaps and bounds. And in the biggest moments of the season, the first 15 minutes against Claremont and in a home semi-final against Scarlets, they've ultimately fallen short of their own standards.
Well, I think so. And I felt there was an awful lot of merit in the comments of how Leinster have gone on this year. I think they've done really, really well, and it's very frustrating, I think, for all followers of Irish rugby to watch what's happened in the Claremont-Leinster game and the Munster-Saracens game, because that just showed the gulf between the top tier of European rugby and then where we are in the Pro 12. And I think in some respects that could have been part of the problem for last weekend, for the fact that I think Munster were embarrassed out of it. They went and played and played against a team who looked very tired too, and I won't say got away with it, but it was far closer than the scoreline said. But Leinster, for me, almost as if, well, they should actually go and beat Scarlets. And then say they forgot to go about how to do it, but they made so many mistakes, errors in judgment, handling, defensive misalignment, lack of aggression at ruck time. For me, there was just something missing of it. And actually, maybe when you look back at it and you say, for a lot of these players, they haven't been that often to the well, and maybe that they had taken some things for granted. But I also felt that some of the better named guys, the big name guys, the guys that are going to go on the lines, just didn't reach the standard that they would want to reach. I thought Johnny Sexton had a poor game. He doesn't have many, but he had a poor one last weekend. And maybe that was a bit of a shock to some of the younger, less experienced players around him, because they responded by, wow, this is, you know, our leader is not firing on all cylinders, panic, as opposed to react to it. Because when it went down to 14 players, there's two ways of reacting. It's force home the advantage or sit back and see what happens. And I think they, you know, Leinster looked to sit back a bit more.
Ultimately, it's an anticlimactic, disappointing season, no doubt yeah. about it. But yeah. two seasons ago, they came within almost a shaved upright of reaching the European Champions Cup final with a Jimmy Goppert drop goal, lost the semi-final next time. That wasn't enough to save Matt O'Connor's job, because their league form was so lamentable and they finished outside the top four, not playing much rugby. Last year, they were embarrassingly bad in Europe, and they got to a Pro 12 final by topping the table, but then Connacht played all the rugby in the final. To keep this season in context, there has been some welcome new additions to the squad in terms of Robbie Henshaw's arrival, Gary Reynolds' emergence, Joey Carberry's emergence, and so on and so forth. Adam Byrne, lots of players. They've used over 51 players, and they came close to topping the table again. They scored 91 tries in 22 games, championship record, 674 points. So I do think the foundation blocks are in place for them to build on that, and you would only hope and imagine that they will learn enormously from these two semi-finals, that for all your championship form, your pool form, and they did play very well in the quarter-final, lest we forget, against Wasps as well, that, you know, when it comes to semi-finals, you've just got to bring your A-game. They didn't come close to bringing their A-game last weekend.
Yeah, I think we'll leave it there on Leinster and move on to the final then, because obviously Munster's performance, as you said, Keith, it was a close game. You look at the scoreboard at the end and you think, okay, well, that was one-way traffic, but actually it wasn't. And there were a couple of key big moments that Razzie Rasmus has been talking about this week, where he actually felt that he had kind of real concern when they had an opportunity to score a try and didn't, only for a mistake to ultimately allow them to score off the back of it. And that was kind of a bit of breathing space for them, about 20 minutes left to go.
Yeah, I don't know that Munster would like to repeat that game playing against Scarlets, because Scarlets took whatever opportunity was put their way against Leinster. And I have to say, when I was looking at that game, I went to that game, a lot of the players, and we're talking the big name guys, and we're talking about people being tired and stuff like that, some of the guys looked shook and tired. It was great to see Conor Murray, you know, back starting and playing well. He did play well. He was still a bit rusty, but he played well. The amount of targeting that was done on CJ Stander meant he never really got up to a gallop much and all as he tried, and he looked tired. You know, he looked a little bit worse for wear, as did Alwyn Jones, actually. So an awful lot of the big names that are going on the Lions weren't saving themselves. I don't believe that to be the case at all. But they looked like they'd played an awful lot of big rugby matches this year, and it showed in some of the performances. But once Munster got their nose ahead, you know, a little bit of a gap, I actually thought that they were in a really good position, because I thought the Ospreys were defeated and mentally looked down. You know, they looked shook. They looked like it was at the end of a long season for them too, and ended up with Munster pulling away at the end.
Unlike the Scarlets, the Ospreys brought absolutely no form or momentum in those semi-finals, and it showed. They did a very good containing job on Munster in the first half in particular. They played territory, they had a fair bit of ball, but they weren't in any way creative like the Scarlets. They didn't try to create much either, and their sum total of their ambition was 3 points, lest we forget. But I do think there's a bedrock to Munster throughout the season that stayed constant, and that's their defence. And there were long stretches where the defence was so aggressive and the work rate was so strong in defence that you always felt they were going to beat the Ospreys because of that, because they had them in a vice-like grip. And then they took their chances eventually, as they do when they came. They weren't nearly as fluid as they've been at earlier points of the season. They still look a little bit shell-shocked since the Saracens game for me. They're going to have to play better in the final, but they could well be capable of doing that. And I think for them to have scored the try, it's funny because you see that try they got from the counter-attack with Keith Earls, Saili, Conor Murray, Andrew Conway, and finally Zeebo all involved, and you see the pace of the outside three, and Saili, what an X-factor player he is, and Conor Murray's little snippet of a contribution, now what a footballer he is, and you think what this team might be capable of. And that was off broken play, off a counter-attack. Brilliant try, one of the tries of the season. Yet for all the possession they have at times, it doesn't look as if any of those pacey outside backs are going to be getting the ball in pace, in space rather, that they can do much with. They're struggling to break down teams through phases. They certainly did against the Ospreys. But I do think that, you know, come the final, I think they might be liberated, but not least by the manner they came through last weekend. There's a certain element of pressure in playing in a semi-final, which, you know, weighs down on home teams as well. I know that no home team had ever lost a semi-final up until this time. There have been 18 wins in a row, but I do think that maybe Munster will be a little bit more liberated in the final, because we know that the conditions are going to suit the Scarlets, and they've got nothing to lose. They can swing from the hip again, and they've got a brilliantly balanced back row, and they've got X-factor throughout their back line. I mean, you look at Aaron Shingler's athleticism, Barclay's just footballing new, Dave's work at the breakdown, his all-round play. It's a beautiful balanced back row, and like I said, they've got good players throughout their back line. I thought Jonathan Davies' defensive performance was an absolute masterclass against Leinster. One thing we have to give them credit for, they stopped Leinster getting around the outside so often by the way Davies pushed up and nailed his man, and it's going to be hard for Munster to break them down as well for that reason. But I do think that Munster will play better probably than they did in the semi-final.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the perfect scenario for Scarlets to be coming in off the back of, because they have put that unbelievable defensive performance with 14 men. They get the benefits of that, and then they also get the man back because the red card was obviously rescinded today. Just to pick up on the point there that Jerry made about Munster being a bit predictable, I guess, maybe, not to put words in your mouth, but when they're not playing off broken ball, is that maybe just the curse of modern rugby, unless you have an unbelievable centre who can pull strings as well as a good number 10? So, like, should we just expect and almost anticipate that that is what we have to get used to with most teams in world rugby at the moment?
Yeah, not every team, but a lot of teams, absolutely, yes. If you're not good enough getting over the gain line or getting your ruck ball or your tackle ball unbelievably quickly back into the scrum half's hands and into the 10's hands or into another forward running onto it. I mean, like, fans bemoan the fact of one-out runners. One-out runners are brilliant if it's done really, really quickly, because you know, there's no way the defending team can get back on side, so you end up getting a bit of a steam up if you do it really, really quickly. At times, Munster's ball has been slow, and that's exacerbated then a little bit, or exacerbates outside to what the players can actually do. I mean, I looked at the game the other day. I thought there was times it was they were having a cut. There was times when there was shows of skill that wasn't going anywhere. There was times in the second half when I got terrorised by Saili coming out of the line, coming up to make a hit when that was not the right call to do. And, you know, you have to keep that integrity of the line, and people often miss on what that is. It's keeping a link to the guy inside you and the guy outside you, that if you flash out of the line, you have to get man and ball. You have to be brilliant at it. He did it a couple of times in the game and he got it wrong. And now Ospreys did not exploit that. I would expect Saracens to. And you just touched on one guy there in Conway, I thought has just got better and better and better as the season has gone along. His work rate is just phenomenal, but his skill under the high ball, and he's looking for stuff all the time. I just think if we can speed up the ball a little, Munster get a chance to actually play a bit more expansively.
Saili was the one player, though, that looked like he might make something happen almost out of nothing, just by his footwork, his strength in contact, his ability to free his hands. He scored a really good try. But you're right, then Tauta is a much better defensive player than Saili. He doesn't make those misreads that you talked about. So it's a dilemma for the final now as well. They've gone for Saili in the semi-final, and they've gone for Tauta long-term. Now, yeah, it'll be interesting what they do here in the final.
Well, I guess that speaks to the whole fact that they want to get that defence and be impregnable, as opposed to being a team who is flashing the ball wide. No. Like, so they're going to build themselves as a defensive team first.
Well, I was interested in a couple of things. When you're at a ground, you see more, you hear more. Firstly, Saïli's try was absolutely incredible. I mean, he got himself into a really good, hard position to be able to get that score, and he was involved in that play twice. It was brilliant, right? So it's not criticism of that, because that is just fantastic play. And actually, Munster don't have many players that can do that. I heard some oohs and ahs of it was great play for passes that he passed out the back of his hands to a player who's standing on the touchline who just gets bundled into touch. Yes, it's a skill that you can do it, but it has to be a skill that leads to getting over the gain line or getting into a better position. He has great skills, and I think in many respects, and I go back to criticism I would have given of Casey Lalala at a time, who's a player who was well able to do an amazing thing with the ball in one hand and all that. And whatever it was, it didn't quite fit the structure that Munster would have had, which is whether it's somebody knowing that they have to run a line, that he's going to do it all the time, or trying and get him to tone down the skill so that it's 80% of it works, not 60% of it. And you know, they're the trade-offs that you have to have. I know that when Tote comes on, and I saw it when he trotted onto the field, I actually thought he was going to go on to 13. He went on to 12, and after about 2 minutes, he shot out of the line. And my God, did he engulf whichever Ospreys player it was, man and ball, and did it perfectly. Because his timing in that defensive line is incredible. And the tackling at 13 and the defensive line you have to have at 13 is just incredibly complex. And I think it suits Tote better.
Jerry, just to ask you your opinion, because I kind of put words in your mouth when I talked about them being a bit predictable. Is that just kind of what Munster will be, that they will be better and more attacking from broken play with that back three than they will be when they're coming off phase play? Or maybe is it too early in this
in the evolution of this ticket and this management? I think you build in blocks, and you start with defence primarily, and you build on from there. I think their attacking game will evolve. You've got JJ Hanrahan coming back next season as well. You've got options of playing a 10-12 double playmaker, using more of Scanlon's distribution skills as well. So I think their attacking game will evolve. And I think everything I hear about Felix Jones is that he's a very, very good coach as well, and they're quite happy in keeping the coaching structure they have in place. So I would be very surprised if their attacking game didn't develop next season. I think you just got to take this in stages. That's the way good teams evolve over time.
And the stage they're at the moment, how much of a quantum leap forward do they need from that semi-final performance to win this game?
Not a huge amount, because if you've got a very strong defence, can nullify an opposition attacking game, albeit the Scarlets is infinitely better than the Ospreys. You know, a one-off cup game, no team is better than Munster at negotiating that, and they're in a final now, so they've got over that semi-final. I think that they would just, you know, when it comes to a final, you've got to play cup rugby as well and know when to kick to the corner, when to play a bit of territory, when to go to the air, when to mix it up. And they are a very patient team. They're very good at grinding. They might not score for a long time, but it's been one of the features of their play this season, that they go through phases and they keep coming back at you, and eventually they don't take an awful lot of risks in possession, so they don't tend to turn over the ball much. But they get there in the end, they get the job done. I wouldn't be putting a mortgage on them at minus 7 points, and I think Scarlett's at 3-1, no less than 5-1 last Friday night. I don't think the bookies are giving them the full respect they deserve. I think it could be well closer than that, a very, very close game. But again, I would think the Munster might just shade it.
Yeah, to wrap up on this by talking about Razzie for a couple of minutes, Keith, it's obviously clearly, it's his team now, this is his group, and the success that we've seen from the team this season hasn't just been built on emotion, it's been built on very strong foundations, good coaching, players being available from an injury perspective as well. They've obviously had a bit of benefit with that. But he talked about the mindset this week as well. Against Saracens, we had 10 minutes before half time when we were on their try line and could have scored to turn the pressure around. I don't think it's a technical and tactical thing that we learned. It's more a mind thing. And again, this is the type of thing, as a head coach, you kind of have to go through it. You can't cheat it.
No, you can't cheat it. And actually, the continuation of that quote was where he admitted to making mistakes at half time in his chat. I love that. Love the idea that a coach has said, yeah, it isn't all just on ye, lads. I put my hand up there when I've made a mistake. And that's a really good thing to be able to do. And, you know, I think he has manoeuvred the team through an incredibly difficult period of time on and off the field. And he has done an incredible job so far. And but for the expectations of everybody for the wishes and wants of that group of players. They'd like to finish out their season with a trophy and not to have it Godwin very close. And I'd concur with some of what Jerry said. You know, Munster have the capacity to go and win this game and play better than they played last week. They need their Lions to be the best players on the field. They need everybody else to back it up to the hilt, and they need to have that level of composure and that mental maturity that Razzie was talking about. But and they can do that, but they need to up their game. If they go with it, taking anything for granted, 3-1, as Jerry said there, if they take that as an idea of what's going to happen, I think we could be in for a horrible Saturday. So let's hope that everybody's fully focused.
Yeah, the evolution of this team would benefit so much from having a trophy. To validate everything.
Six years without one, isn't it? I mean, just it's all about trophies, and there are only two on offer. That's why they're so hard to get. And they would have been a long way from favourites to win a trophy at the start of this season. They barely squeezed into sixth place last season. I don't think many people were tipping them to win it. So in the season they've had, emotionally on and off the pitch, to have come through this and finish it off on the very last day of the season with the trophy, it would just transform their summer, their off-season and their pre-season next year. It would be, and on top of the move into the UL complex as well, it would be a natural progression where the Woods stunt their development, you think, a little bit if they didn't get that trophy.
Yeah, okay, for sure. Just a quick few final thoughts about the Lions. You mentioned there that the Munster Lions have to be the best players from their perspective. Warren Gatland was saying that the Munster lads are going to be a bit behind everybody else because they're not training with the rest of the team at the moment. Whatever secret juju they have going on to intimidate the All Blacks or whatever is obviously, you know, you can't learn that in an afternoon session, apparently. I don't buy any of that stuff. I think that, like, a brilliant performance from Peter O'Mahony reminds everybody, hang on a second now.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, it's in the context of a final as well. And the same goes for any final domestically. If you win a trophy, you come in with that extra bit, a winner's medal. I mean, yeah, I think Warren has really enjoyed the benefit of having 30 players in camp this week. He wasn't expecting that. It went from 14 the previous week to 30. Saracens and Leinster both losing gave him an extra 10 players that he wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
And he's got all three out halves in camp this week, which he certainly wasn't expecting. So they've probably managed to achieve an awful lot more in the Carton House this week than otherwise they would have done. But I still couldn't agree with you more. If you have a blinder in a final this weekend, you arrive into camp on Sunday with a winner's medal, you've caught up a fair amount of ground.
Yeah, now if you play badly, I can see how that definitely diminish your opportunities. Like, but if you do have, this is a much bigger stage than that training session.
You would have thought so.
Keith?
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. It's not a comment that you'd find a whole lot of credibility in, really.
One last thing there. The English press had decided that Owen Farrell was the starting 10 after Johnny Sexton's performance last week, and that it's a done deal, it's over.
There'd be more where that came from.
No point in even talking about this anymore.
Well, I'll tell you what we did see last weekend. We saw the three 10s on show in Johnny and Bigger. And Owen Farrell was masterful last weekend. The two guys were below par. And so how does that factor into what Warren is thinking? Because they didn't play, so he has them now for a week, so hopefully he'll get them back to the way he wants them. But it none of it really matters until you turn up and you go out there, you play, you train. You train in that white-hot training of everybody trying to get into that 10 jersey. I'll tell you what, there'll be a lot of twists and turns before anybody gets a 10 for a Lions Test Series.
One of the disappointing aspects of covering the last four Lions tours is how increasingly parochial the media coverage has become, to the point where I remember one media room in midweek, and there was an English player in one corner of the room with a huge sizable chunk of media around him, all English. There was an Irish player in another corner, all Irish journalists around him, and there was a Welsh player in one corner, and guess what, loads of Welsh players, and there was a vacant corner where there was no Scots journalists or players. But it was like I decided I'd go in and I'd listen in to the Mike Phillips interview, and I was really happy because I don't get a chance to interview Mike Phillips that much, so I thought it'd be something different. And towards the end, others ventured over when they'd finished with their ones first, but it was strictly along international lines. It became increasingly parochial, and it has done over the last four, and it's a bit disappointing, to be honest.
Is the readership, though, a bit like that, in that we want to know how Robbie Henshaw's getting on, so that's why everybody files out Robbie Henshaw first, when actually what we should be doing is taking this opportunity to get to know these Welsh players a bit more.
Yeah, I would have thought so. That's the way I would like to look at it always, you know what I mean, because it is an opportunity. I've always disliked Mike Phillips intensely when he played for the opposition, be it the Ospreys or Wales, particularly wherever it was. But when he's a British and Irish Lions number 9, you're quite happy to have him in your team. You see him in a completely different light.
Yeah. this partisanship, Keith, I guess.
I hate it. I mean, it's
horrible,
drives
me, doesn't it?
Yeah, and well, it drives me mad because, you know, when you go out there, it's one of those hard things. And I get that some people aren't enamoured with the Lions, and I think that's fine, right? And people aren't enamoured with the name British and Irish Lions, and that's fine. That's fine too, I think. But for me, once you get out there, once you get in a flight and you're a Lion, you have to play to that red jersey, which isn't a very comfortable jersey for, you know, an Irish guy. Yes, it is for Munster, but not for, when you're looking at it, when you're looking at the Welsh guys, they seem to be very comfortable inside in it. But, you know, you're trying to get rid of all the cliques. You're trying to share stories with other people, get to know other people all the time. You're trying to, after 4 weeks, play in a test series together with someone that you don't really know. You can't think of yourself as Irish and him as Welsh or English or Scottish. You just can't. And that's the trick for the Lions, is that sense of oneness. Yeah, it's a bit sad. If
Keith, maybe it reflects the times we live in. Nationalism is on the rise globally, and we live in a time of Brexit, and some of these papers represent very strongly held pro-Brexit views.
Maybe it does, but from a sporting perspective, I'd quite be happy to leave the politics go stuff.
On that note,
politics and sports don't mix, but alas, they do.
Yeah. All right, lads, enjoy the game this weekend. Thanks a million.
Cheers.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. With Air Sport and all the BT Sport channels now free with your Air broadband bundle.